each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you all for tuning into The Winds of Change. It's Wednesday, at least in the real time sequence of things. I'm Father Tom Coys, ready here to wrinkle your brain once again. But again, you may be listening to this on a non-Wednesday, which is a good thing to do. Everyone, all of us needs to know how to do podcasts. So God bless you for listening on podcast as well as on live radio today. Actually, I don't know how to say this. I'm getting tired. I'm sure you are too. I'm getting tired of talking about COVID. I'm getting tired of the challenges it's facing. Nothing seems to be changing when there's a lot of... Yeah, that's how I feel. And I have to share with you a story, and we have a guest here today, about the crazy things that happen when people get COVID and are hospitalized, right? You know, we all... Many people can get it and ride it out at home with certain treatment. Of course, every time we get sick, we wonder about how do you treat this? But this is the one problem that we're woefully not addressing with good science, with good medicine, with good doctors. Yes, it's a deep challenge. Yes, it's a nasty disease. Yes, it's a mysterious, evasive kind of monster, miniature monster we're facing, and yet human society has faced such things for years and years. And with our new modern technology, we think we can whip everything. Of course, we can't whip everything, but there are definitely things that we can throw at these this COVID thing. Anyways, to discuss a sticky issue that came up, we have with us one of the wonderful attorneys from Malkin Baker through the great, wonderful St. Thomas More Society, Kristen. Ms. Kristen Erickson, are you there? Can you hear me?
I am here. Good morning.
Hey, good to see you. I'm Father Tom Coys, and this is, we got a wonderful listening audience here in the Chicagoland area, and you are in the Chicagoland area, I believe, right?
Yep, yeah, downtown Chicago.
Yeah, but what we need to share with our listeners today is it's a new fight, or it's a fight that's happened other places, but now it's close to home here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you brief our listeners with some action that you folks have been involved with? It has to do with Naperville, right?
Yes, it does, actually. Yes, we are co-counsel in a case that's wrapping up here, but our client is a Chinese woman whose father has been in the hospital with COVID for a little over 3 weeks now. I think he was diagnosed around October 16th, and he was hospitalized, and then 3 days later, he was put on a ventilator. Mm. And the hospital it's Edward Hospital, they had implemented their particular COVID protocol, which is remdesivir and other medications, I'm sure, and that didn't work. So at some point, the daughter asked the hospital to give him ivermectin, and the hospital wouldn't do it. So she sought counsel from New York attorneys Beth Parlato and Ralph Larigo, who specialize in this. And then we joined as co-counsel, being that we can practice in Illinois. And after a week of motions, hearings, and evidentiary hearing on November 1st, Judge Paul Fullerton ordered the hospital to stand back and allow our doctor to go in and give the patient ivermectin. And after 3 days, he was able to be off the ventilator for 2 hours. And after 5 days of ivermectin, he's off the ventilator. So there's some success here, and it's been incredible to be a part of it and to be able to help Mr. Ng.
Yeah, that it's another success story of of this medication, this treatment. And we're not, no one's claiming it to be a magic bullet, or no one's, it's not the miracle drug, obviously. But it certainly is helping a lot of people. I think that's one of the things that we want all our listeners to be aware of, that it is helping a lot of people, and that it is prohibited by so many hospital and medical facilities. Is I can't get my head around that. I just can't understand what kind of forces are behind that kind of prohibition. Do you have a little better sense of the reticence, the fear of using a drug that ivermectin has been around for years? And it's always had very few bad side effects. At least that's what I'm reading. You know.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, I think that there, I think it's just COVID hasn't been around very long, and I think hospitals like to, I don't know, spend time with whatever they're implementing as their standard of care. And I think they're just, maybe they haven't encountered something like COVID where they have to make adjustments with it not working, right? When people go on a ventilator, the mortality rate is really high. There could be other incentives, I don't know, politically, financially, for hospitals and to do other, to not be open to off-label medications like ivermectin. I can't say for sure, but the success in these types of cases is phenomenal. And our co-counsel has tried over 100 of these cases nationally and been successful. And she said that hospitals are starting to be open to implementing ivermectin, allowing it, and there's some shifting occurring. So even though maybe it's been later here that these cases have come in, here in Illinois, they've been happening all over the country since January of this year.
Yeah, yeah. And the person who was sick was the father of a doctor.
Correct,
it seems even more odd that a hospital wouldn't sort of take the advice of a doctor. And I assume it's an MD, a doctor of medicine.
No, she's a PhD in mechanical engineering from Northwestern.
Okay. Well, that I don't know if that makes a bit of, that makes some difference, but not, doesn't invalidate it completely.
Right.
Somebody with an eighth grade education could be sick and asking for ivermectin, and it'd be a legitimate request. You had to go. How fast do you have to operate when? In terms of the legal motion to get a judge involved, how, to me, it seems like whenever you're going to do some kind of legal action, you need about 6 to 8 months to get anywhere, you know?
Right.
But when you're dealing with, let's get this today or tomorrow, how the heck does that work?
That's such a great question. Our client contacted Beth and Ralph in New York, I think, maybe like October 23rd, we got involved a couple days later, maybe the following day. And then by the 28th of October, everything was put together, the complaint, and we filed everything on October 28th.
So that's 5 days after.
We requested an emergency hearing. And so by Monday, the November 1st, we were before the judge, because we filed this, you know, it's, you know, we'll contact the judge's clerk and say this is, Can we have an emergency hearing? So it all happened really fast.
But I would think judges would easily say, you know, you're requesting an emergency hearing, and he would say, well, so are 12 other people, and you'll have to get in line. Somehow, some kind of decision has to be made to move it up, move it along.
Yeah.
Right? Were you involved in any of the conversations with the hospital administration or change their policy and allow a doctor to go in?
Oh, okay.
Whether it was
no, yeah. So two things. So you said, how would the case be moved up? Well, the judge can read on the complaint within the allegations specifically about what's happened here with this gentleman. Right off on the first page, he's in the ICU with COVID. It's life or death, right? So the judge sees that, and I imagine that's what moves it up to the top of the docket. And then secondly, I forgot your second question.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Yeah, did you have to talk with, go to an office or just talk on the phone with someone from the hospital?
Well, they had counsel that appeared on November 2nd for a hearing, and they wouldn't change their policy even if we wanted them to, right? Since that last case took place in their hospital in May of 2021, they implemented a policy saying that ivermectin cannot be used in the hospital. But despite that coming in and, you know, the judge hearing that evidence, he ordered the hospital. Despite that, he said, no, you have to let this doctor go in and give this person ivermectin because they're signing a release and an informed consent, releasing of all liability. So it had nothing to do with them changing the policy. It just has to do with this individual case in the hospital allowing ivermectin for this particular patient.
Well, that's kind of a key thing for our listeners to appreciate. If you find yourself in that situation, you ask the doctor or nurse or who's ever in charge of the patient for a waiver.
A release.
A release from liability. I'm going to have to show some of my cards in the sense that for the past 40 years, there's been a woeful silence about worrying about the life of unborn children. There's a woeful silence about really caring for life and death issues in that regard. And now all of a sudden, there seems to be a strange awakening to we have to protect life. This is an issue of life and death. And so that people are so now concerned with the life and death of the stranger is strange in my mind. I can't help but express the opinion that we're more afraid of being sued than we are not helping someone in need. And that's just, we just use the phrase litigious society, everything does end up in court. That is a strange reference. I'll throw a little biblical history at everyone, and that is, it's good to remember that before Israel in the Old Testament got its first king, it was the time of the judges. And the judges were sort of the wise men of the society. And as long as you had good judges, you didn't need a king, actually. That's what sort of God's way of thinking of things for the kingdom of Israel. And because the judges became corrupt, because children, sons were not as honest and fair and as their fathers, and they were taking bribes and making bad decisions. That's when the time of the kings was kicking in. The people were saying, we need a king to rule over us. And God says, well, you have the judges. Let them be the judges. And it just highlights this super important issue. And I talked about this in a sermon not long ago when I said, who judges the judges? Who polices the police? Who teaches the teachers? Who shepherds the shepherds? That it's a question that never goes away, and we are faced with a lot of that in a lot of these different kind of departments of life, as it were. And I'm amazed that you found a judge quick enough that was open to the idea of give this person a shot at this drug. Was it hard to find? Well, lawyers don't get to pick what judge, do they? But they figure out what court level, what circuit court to kind of petition, I guess.
So when you file a case, you file it in the circuit of that, you know, where that particular incident occurred. So because the hospital is in that district, it's in the 18th. I can't remember if it's circuit or district, but it's out in that particular region. And then as we file the case, we file it in Chancery, but we're not suing the hospital for any money, no money damages. It's just basically in Chancery you're filing and saying either do this, we want the judge to say do this or don't do this. And so it goes to Chancery just when we file, and then the judge, it's just assigned randomly. We don't have anything to do with that. So this is the judge that we were assigned the case to, and he was a phenomenal judge. He is a phenomenal judge, and he made the right decision in this case.
Interesting. Maybe we could, we got to take our first break. Hopefully you could stand with us a bit longer. Maybe we could think of any of the personal side with the daughter of the sick man, why he was here. I think I saw that a little bit in one of the episodes. He's from China, so it's an interesting connection. Wondering if you had any insights or any stories to tell regarding, you know, the personal side of the story there. This is Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to the new Catholic home of EWTN. This is WNDZ on AM 750 and WSFI 88.5 FM.
The cold and snow is just about here. And so, Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stanislaus Kostka is asking for donations of new or used men's winter coats. You may drop them off Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at the Soup Kitchen off the church parking lot. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Thank you for your generosity.
I'm Loretta Freilich, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for listening to the Winds of Change today on Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. I'm chatting with one of the attorneys from a law firm that represented a woman whose father was at Edwards Hospital out there in beautiful Naperville. I would imagine we have a number of listeners out and around that area. It's a top-notch otherwise great place to be sick, I guess you could say, right? But they ran into the roadblock of the hospital's policy not allowing ivermectin to be administered or even tried. The fact that this sick man was from China, was that any, did that cause any extra fear to be placed on his condition? Can't imagine, even though there's so much evidence that thinking that the virus itself came from China. But that didn't, that wouldn't have affected any of the legal issues, I would think.
No, I don't think that affected anything, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think it's just more a matter of the hospital's policy and protocols and just not feeling comfortable or willing to have a doctor come in without a court order.
Yeah, without a court order. It seems such a strange policy when judges are supposed to be experts in legal matters. They're not experts in medical matters. Why? How have we got to that point where doctors can't make the medical decisions without a judge? What would you say your best shot at the reason why we are where we are? I don't know if that's a clear enough question, but to me it seems it's what I'm asking myself. How do we get here, you know?
Well, I don't know the full back, you know, why exactly we're here. I will say, though, that the Judge Fullerton heard, you know, evidence from doctors on both sides in the evidentiary hearing. So he wasn't making a decision as an MD. He was evaluating the evidence and the credibility and really looking at the patient. What is his, is he about to die? And he was fully convinced, and he said this is an extraordinary measure in an extraordinary circumstance because his life is on the line. This is life or death. And so that was what convinced him. He wasn't acting as a doctor.
Yeah.
Someone else had asked me, you know, whether this will become more common. Do we have to do this, keep going to court? I don't know. I mean, it's. I think it's up to hospital administrators and up to individually to decide, are they going to allow this because it's helping people? And we have to really look at, do we want to save lives or do we want to have policies just to have policies? And if someone's willing to release the liability, then they're, you know, I don't know why they won't allow it. So, you know, the background could be big pharma and, you know, other motivating factors that have gotten us to this place. But at this point, it seems exciting that they're shifting and that there's opening up for, you know, off-label medications that have been around for 30 years that do work with barely any side effects. So it seems exciting to me, but I can empathize with the hospitals and probably, you know, how they're doing and feeling about it. But if it's about saving lives, I think we're onto something now.
That's good. You know, I keep reading, and I've heard this statistic before. I think it's pretty accurate that in general, as vaccines, to shift a little bit of the discussion from therapeutics to the, to the vaccine issue, that generally speaking, when a vaccine is concocted, I'll use that non-scientific term, when a vaccine is concocted to fight a certain virus or disease of one kind or another, that in general, the studies that happen, if there's 50 deaths reported, then the drug is pulled. Now, I would think that would be maybe 50 deaths within a year or 50 deaths within a month. But certainly the instances of very bad side effects, including even death, for people getting the vaccine is way, way over. I think I remember reading not too long ago recently that there are easily officially reported 17,000 deaths within the week after getting the vaccine, right? Does that sound plausible to you?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm sure there have been deaths. I believe in the vaccine too, so I don't, you know. I think one of the things, just to bring it back to this, the evidentiary hearing in this case, the physicians on both sides said there are side effects to all medications. And so just to put that back into perspective, there are side effects, and I don't know what the death rate is of ivermectin versus the vaccine, but I hear what you're saying, that this vaccine that we're using, that we claim to be so, that claims to be so helpful, people are dying of it as well. That makes sense as an argument, but I don't know what the numbers actually show total.
Yeah. Well, check out, I would imagine you've heard of, if not, I think our listeners have heard of Flatten the Fear, or Doctors at the Front Line. There are so many doctors who are raising so many red flags that at the very minimal, there should be a pause button or a allow the person to take the risk themselves, taking the vaccine.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
Oh, boy. Now, are you old enough to remember Lost in Space and that the early versions of Lost in Space?
No, I don't. I've never heard of it.
That was a great serial TV show back in the 70s, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Lost in Danger, and that was the robot sounding the alarm that there's danger.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, that's what that little sound clip there was from. I guess I'm going back to and as you said, there's risks. There's risks in everything. And each choice involves a risk, and each choice does open yourself up to negative consequences. Mm-hmm. If there were a choice that had no negative consequences, then it's a no-brainer, I guess you could say. But certainly, to vax or not vax, to ivermectin or not ivermectin, to remdesivir or non-remdesivir, they all do contain risks. And you're risking your life. To me, one of the great challenges is to disprove the fact that that the COVID virus will linger and stay on inanimate objects, you know, desks and tables and chairs and door handles and all the rest. And of course, we know that there's any kind of infection can linger on a door handle. But that this particular virus lingers there for hours or days even has been disproved by so many different doctors. I just think that's it's important for us to keep that perspective in mind. The idea that a judge has to step in between two doctors. This is how I'll bring the conversation to a Catholic theology point or issue. To me, the fact that a judge has to step in between two medical doctors, both having medical degrees, both being scientists in their own right, just underscores the fact that natural science is not infallible. There is a tremendous amount of, when a person considers Catholicism as their faith system, and you as I do many oftentimes, try to help a non-Catholic appreciate the doctrines of Catholicism. Somewhere along the line, we come to the idea of infallibility. And of course, most Americans today would say it's impossible to come to an infallible statement. And I guess what I'm saying is that I'm kind of comfortable with saying that scientific research and scientific opinions need to refrain from declaring themselves infallible. It's hard enough to proclaim certain theological points infallible, but that concept of it, something can't be wrong is foreign to us modern American thinkers. And so that's why Catholicism especially is seen to be unfit for modern consumption. Maybe that's the way I'll say it. So that a judge has to step in between two scientists because the scientists can't agree just underscores this flexibility or the need to keep asking questions, the need to explore, the need to be willing to say we were wrong. And that's what it's a strange attitude I see on a number of people that are not willing to say something like, well, maybe Dr. Fauci is taking us in the wrong direction. Maybe he is wrong on some of his pronouncements and the whole society is following. And actually then the whole world is following because the world does in a lot of ways look to the United States. Can you think of any other cases that might be of interest to our listeners here while we have? Can you stay on for another segment, perhaps?
I have a hearing I have to get to, but I appreciate you having me on. I guess as a last plug, there is, just to help the listeners, if they go to FLCCC. F as in Frank, L, and then triple C. If they do that in Google, it takes you to a website, which is the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance, and they have done a lot of research, and that is on their website. And there's also information about ivermectin, how to get it, that's easy to find on the toolbar. But they have a list of physicians all over the country that will prescribe. So if that's something that could be of interest, I just would plug that just as an informative
very good
bit there.
FLCC, Frontline COVID Critical Care.
Yep, three C's.
Yeah, very, yeah. Very good.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
I want to thank you for being here. Is it Kristen or Christy? Or
Kirsten. Kirsten.
Oh, okay. Kirsten. Very, very good.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you and keep standing up for what is right in this crazy world of ours. You're standing within the legal world, and there's so much so much of the society is looking to depend.
Mm-hmm.
Is depending
on. It's an honor. Yep.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Take good care.
You too.
Yeah. I'm Father Tom Coyes, and I'm sitting in for Father Anthony Bush on the Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. It's WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ. We're also on 88.5 FM WFSI.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when Masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available
And St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church. And a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Koska Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. It was sad to hear that story. Now we're shifting gears here a little bit, but sad to hear that story of hospitals just refusing simple request to treat somebody with COVID with a drug that has not perfect but a great track record in helping people overcome COVID, and that is the ivermectin. It's a simple drug. Sometimes you'll hear it referred to as a horse dewormer drug. If you hear that, and that will be a common comeback or a common defense of those hospitals that don't want to use it. Of course, that it's a silly comeback because a lot of drugs can do a lot of different things, and they may have been developed for one problem, but then it is discovered that they're helpful in another problem. And if a veterinarian discovered ivermectin to help horses that had worms, then it had something to do with purifying the gut, right? wherever the worms live within the horse's health system, blood system, and then it certainly can attack certain of these other kinds of problems. I used to call almost all diseases bugs. You know, I got a little bug. Somehow, it just seemed to be a word that I learned as a boy, and I just never shook it. So whenever I'm sick, I always have a little bug. And perhaps it's not that off track that it's a something alien that comes into you that's not supposed to be in you. In these conversations we have with people, please ask them to help you understand why what spiked proteins are all about. We use that little phrase, spike proteins. As I tried to explain it to myself and explain it to others, the word spiked obviously conjures up a strange little ball that has spikes on it. And that's not really off mark. The virus comes into you, And the vaccine that is given to us, this mRNA vaccine, it's not a vaccine in the classical sense of the term, right? So it puts spike proteins in you, and they clog, they sit themselves in your blood vessels, and you could sort of see. I'm a person who likes to go for hikes, you know, out in the woods and what have you, and especially in any of the Cook County Forest Preserves, there's a lot of weeds. And we all know that when you walk through some of those weeds, you get the little spurs that stick onto your pants, right? Or if you have a dog, heaven forbid, that's one of the... A long time ago, I had a dog, and I used to love taking him out for walks, but heaven forbid if he'd run through the tall grass and he'd come back with a bunch of those little spurs stuck to him. Imagine that kind of thing happening inside your blood vessels. If they do land inside, if they stick to the inside of your blood vessels, the other spike side of the protein will cause, it'll catch things. You know, we all know that white and red blood corpuscles pass through our veins all the time. And so if there's little spikes sticking out of the inside wall of our blood vessels, then that would seem very logical to increase the idea of a clotting, right? A blood clotting. And that is one of the sad ill effects of getting the vaccine. I had a blood test myself, and the doctor showed me the results of the blood test, and he did a number of tests to the blood that are not usually done. He was looking for specific traits of my blood, and it was kind of a good news, bad news thing. He says, the good news is that your blood is such that you shouldn't take the vaccine. The bad news is your blood is such that you shouldn't take the vaccine because you're prone to blood clotting. So that you can't imagine how or why someone would challenge my decision to not take it, because I don't want to develop a stroke or aneurysm. Those are forms of blood clots, of course, because that can be a ill side effect of the vaccine. Anyways, we got to keep praying, Lord, to help us get through this. Every sane person wants to see this behind us. Except for the fact that it has given some people a tremendous amount of control, that there's a kind of a natural addiction to the ability to control other people. And I'm afraid that's part of what we're facing in our society today. We can lock you down. We can tell you where not to go.
Wow.
Preventing you from
just
this,
wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, preventing you from this restaurant or that play or getting on this plane or whatever. That kind of control over other people is addictive. And I think we're finding that part of it. Let me change a bit, and then I'm going to start in a whole other topic. And obviously, we're going to have to come back to this, as we often do on the Winds of Change here. I really think in this age, in the Catholic Church, especially with regard to liturgical life and what the Mass, what we do as Catholics, called the Mass, it's very good for us to review in history a guy by the name of Archbishop Thomas Cranmer. Archbishop Thomas Cranmer lived in the 1500s, and he was a Catholic, first priest and then a bishop and then an archbishop. He's the one who, under Henry VIII, sort of dismantled the Mass as it was known back then, and as a lot of it is known today, the old Mass, what we call the Tridentine Mass, the traditional Latin Mass, was the Mass of that time, and so it was dismantled step by step, and Archbishop Cranmer was the instigator of it all. And there were many others. And as I'd like to take you maybe over a couple of Wednesdays here, a couple of podcasts through this amazing story, I have to say, history, of course, is very fascinating. To be just interested in history for the sake of knowing what went on before us is valuable in and of itself. I sometimes pride myself or please myself by thinking it's good to know history, because when I get to heaven, I want to be able to meet and talk with as many people throughout history as possible. I would like to talk to St. Thomas More. I'd like to talk to Archbishop Cranmer, if he's through at purgatory already. I hope after 500 years he would be, but remember, time isn't the same for us as it is for the next world, shall we say? So anyways, but it's also good to read history because we say history repeats itself, right? And so when we look at stories through history, when we say, oh, history can repeat itself, what we mean by that primarily, I believe, is that it's a statement of belief that human nature doesn't change. Human nature as a constant. Of course, our intellect has developed. We're smarter about many things in the universe. We have even some development of doctrine as part of our Catholic doctrine. We can appreciate more deeply the truths of God and heaven and hell and all the rest. But the fact that human nature is constant kind of means that we can fall victim to the same vices as people did back in the 16th century, and we need some of the same virtues that the heroes expressed or did in the 16th century. But we pray we can avoid repeating some of the same mistakes, as it were. And so there is a certain sense of I've used this term before on Winds of Change. That is, when we're looking at history, you a lot of times uncover messes that you never knew existed. You look back in time and you say, yuck, how terrible is that? And so there is a certain virtue, what I call holy forgetfulness. Holy forgetfulness. It's kind of the opposite of holy remembering. You know, you do have to remember great things of the past, but there's a certain kind of holy forgetfulness. I think of looking at church history, it's similar to when people go through annulment processes in their marriage. A lot of times people don't like to do an annulment for a previous marriage because they say, I'm past that. I don't want to bring up past wounds. Let bygones be bygones, etc. And I certainly understand that attitude, but the church through that annulment process is trying to say, yeah, but we got to make sure you learned a good lesson. And maybe you were right about this, and maybe you were wrong about that. So we go through. And so as we go, I'm going to share a little bit of the story of Archbishop Thomas Cranmer. After this last break, we're going to take one more break, and I'll give you the thumbnail sketch of what happened and some of these characters that were operating back in that early days when England broke away from Catholicism. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes, and I'm sitting in for Father Anthony Bush on the Winds of Change, the new EWTN Catholic radio voice for Chicagoland, which is WSFI, Catholic Radio, on AM 750, WNDZ. And we're also on 88.5 FM, WFSI.
Here's something that you should know about what's happening at St. Stan's. The Daughters of St. Mary of Providence Religious Order operates the Providence Soup Kitchen on the premises of St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. The Soup Kitchen serves a midday meal Monday through Thursday from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Anyone who needs a meal is welcome. If you can volunteer to help and serve meals on a regular basis, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That's 773-870-2435. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Mary Fiorito, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to Winds of Change. I got to give you a thumbnail of the Protestant Reformation as it happened in England, because the transformation of the Mass, which was fairly similar to what we now know as the traditional Latin Mass, it certainly got codified with the Council of Trent. That's why we call it the Trentine Mass. It got codified a little bit after the break that is between England and Rome, Germany and Rome, all the different Protestant churches that arose. But it was, in a lot of ways, and I think especially in England, with their love for ritual and all the rest, it would look pretty much the same. It wasn't too wildly interpreted as perhaps it was in different places. But so the two key aspects of the attack on the old Mass, as described by Archbishop Cranmer, were the concept of the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the concept that the Eucharist was a participation in the cross of Christ. I'm sure many of you have heard both of those kind of arguments, but it really, even if people don't know the theological debate or who said what, there is a sense when someone drifts away from wanting to go to Mass and receive the Eucharist, there you lose the sense that when you go to Mass and receive Holy Communion, you are literally receiving the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. It seems almost inconceivable that someone who doesn't go to Mass would believe in the real presence. There is a drifting, or there's a weakening of that. Think of the crowds that followed our Lord in the gospel stories, right? They saw the healer. They saw the great miracle worker. They saw the wonderful teacher that was speaking and sharing wisdom that went far beyond what they normally heard from whoever they heard it from, either the Jewish leaders or the wise philosophers of the day. Anyways, that one aspect of when the Mass, when the priest says the words of consecration, a miracle of transubstantiation takes place. That's Archbishop Cranmer loathed that, did not like that idea. But I think even deeper than that was the teaching that this is part of this sacrifice of Christ. So interestingly enough, King Henry VIII really did like the doctrine of the real presence. He thought that was He thought that was something to hold on to. I'm sure he must have believed it in some way or another. He wasn't so fond of the doctrine of the real sacrifice of Christ, that when you're praying the Mass, you're joining in on the sacrificial life of Jesus, the sacrificial death of our Lord, because that means when you participate in the sacrificial side of Christ's life, then that means you got to make sacrifices in your own life. And that, I think, is almost the hardest part of the doctrine. And if you look at Thomas Cranmer's life under Henry VIII, he did take a wife or mistress as archbishop. So strange. And Henry VIII was all for celibacy for the clergy. He kind of figured, obviously, he was not anywhere near going to take that vow, going through six wives, right? Remember Henry VIII, his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, and the way there's a little rhyme that I always remember. His first wife, Catherine of Aragon, he divorced. Second one, Anne Boleyn, he beheaded. So it's divorced, beheaded, and died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. So the last one, his last wife, Jane of Cleves, lived longer than him. So, but the other two he'd beheaded, and the others died. One died. Jane Seymour died in childbirth of the little Edward, who would become King Edward VI. So we're in that whole realm, and Cranmer, being the successor to another cardinal by the name of Wolsey, he takes on a mistress, but he keeps it hidden from Henry VIII. And so he's trying different priests, he's punishing different priests for having mistresses themselves, and he has one himself. And so he's got to change this whole attitude and the whole religion. And the way he does it is to change the Mass. They didn't want to call it the Mass anymore. They would call it communion service. And therefore, the first three editions, there were four or five editions of what it was called the Book of Common Prayer. And because Cranmer was a very good writer, because he was very good at literature, he wrote beautiful prose, and he was able to write beautiful prayers and comments on the Psalms and Scripture. Perhaps he would even translate parts of Scripture in beautiful ways that many people thought, hey, that sounds better, it sounds nicer. I guess maybe even it was part of why they got the these, thems, those, and thous that sometimes today we find offensive, but some people do like to hear those. I kind of enjoy when I'm reading a passage from the Bible and it has that little more flowery kind of language, which you don't like use normally. There's something neat about it because you feel like, well, I'm reading the Bible. I'm not just reading a regular letter. So he reconstructed the Mass to eradicate those two issues, the real presence and the sacrificial nature of the Mass. So in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to share more with you about that. So God bless you for listening to The Winds of Change. I am Father Tom Coyce, guest host on The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNBZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
Truth or sit on the fence, can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Such meaningless thought, the the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.